Jerry Seinfeld, Jim Gaffigan come to T-Mobile Center January 18th. Tickets are on sale now at AXS.com. Listen for the sounder in this segment. You have a chance to qualify to win those tickets to go see those two live. Bob will be there. I'll be there. Yep. I'm excited to see this.
It's going to be great, man. I can't wait. Like, Jim Gaffigan is one of my favorites. Obviously, Seinfeld's one of my favorites as well. To see the two of them together, man, it's going to be a wild, wild night. And it's not going to be like wild, like Jim Gaffigan and Seinfeld are getting naked on stage or something like that, but whatever. But it's going to be great. I've never really seen Seinfeld in person. Have you ever seen Jerry in person?
No, I haven't. That's why I'm going. I'm excited to see what it's going to be like and kind of see how his, you know, stand-up is. I don't know where he's at in his life right now with what his material is, but I could definitely go check it out and see. I think the last thing I've seen him do live was he was doing a commencement speech at Duke University.
Oh, no kidding. Cool. Yeah. All right. Great. Gaffigan's great, too. I've never seen him a couple of times. He's really, really good. Really, really funny. And I think he's kind of underrated, too. So I think his TV shows have been good. I think it was called The Jim Gaffigan Show on some channel, which my wife and I really enjoyed. And then the show called My Boys back in the day was like, I don't even really remember what it was, but I know we loved it. We watched every episode of it. Then it went away. Like, where did it go? So Gaffigan's good. Obviously, Seinfeld's good. So when you hear that sounder, be caller 7913-586-7965, and you can win it. And you brought up something interesting, you know, in the break just now with this baseball doubleheader today. Like, what are you doing? Like, if you're the Braves and Mets, are you looking at each other and going, all right, we'll throw game one if you throw game two type of thing? Or what do you do? Like, the Diamondbacks.
Well, give them the scenario first.
Right, if each team wins a game, they both get into the playoffs.
Correct.
Okay, if one team sweeps, then the team that sweeps gets in, and the Arizona Diamondbacks become the other team that get into the playoffs. So the Diamondbacks are just sitting here waiting around. So the Mets and Braves have a doubleheader beginning at noon today. What do you do if you're the Mets and Braves in this thing?
So this really is like what you said earlier, Dusty, with the Raiders and the Chargers last game of the season. Wow, that's insane.
Yeah. So if I'm a manager, I'm doing the whole, you know, casino garage, like they're reading our lips, say, so we got to go do this privately. Hey, just throw the first one, and then the next game, you know, we'll throw it, and we'll just keep our players, you know, rested, basically, and screw Arizona.
But they all hate each other there in those two sides of the thing. Like, the Braves and Mets, there's no love lost, right? So do you work to keep the other team out? Do you waste pitching when you have to play, because there's no off day? You're playing tomorrow, right? One team's either going to San Diego or Milwaukee after this day today, hopefully for both of them involved. And so do you waste pitching? Like, I mean, the pressure's on whoever loses game one to win game two too. So I mean, the pressure gets really turned up. Like, if the Mets lose game one, their backs are against, like, it's drama at its finest, man.
Or they're not, because then it's like, all right, we're going to have our pitcher go out there, and he's just going to, like, lob it over the plate because we don't want to, like, you know, wear and tear his arm. Like, we're going to punt this game to you. Mm-hmm. Just win it.
Right.
And then, you know, I don't know, just bunt every time you go to the plate, get out of the inning.
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting.
That might make baseball interesting.
Yeah. Today is going to make baseball interesting, though. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how these teams approach it. So.
Speaking of interesting, do you want to see how interesting it was, how bad we got it wrong?
Not really. Because I think we failed miserably on this one.
Do this every time I watch games on Sunday, is how bad or how accurate I was to the script. And I know for a fact I was absolutely terrible. I know I didn't get anywhere near the script.
I will do you first. Then.
Okay, fair free. Go ahead. The Chiefs will win. I will get that out of the way. First off, the Chiefs will win. Thank you.
And that's it. Scene.
Sure, yeah. Rashee Rice has a typical Rashee Rice game. Somewhere along the lines of 6-7 catches for 75-plus yards. I also think that Rashee Rice could have a chance to score a touchdown. Mm-hmm. He probably will have a touchdown.
Okay.
I think that Kareem Hunt will score in the first half. He was, as of yesterday, plus 220 to score. Prop numbers weren't up there.
220 just an anytime touchdown.
Anytime touchdown, Kareem Hunt, plus 220.
Oh, I think you got to hit that.
I mean, there's a chance. I think he gets it in the first half as a welcome back to the Kansas City Chiefs. Okay. And why not do it with two middle fingers to the Los Angeles Chargers? I think Patrick Mahomes gets out of his head, like they had said on, Nate Taylor said, I think Patrick Mahomes throws for 250 plus, and I think Travis Kelce will get back to his typical Travis Kelce game because he eats and pries on the Los Angeles Chargers defense. I think Travis Kelce has somewhere along the lines of 6 for 70 and a touchdown. I think Justin Herbert will play. I think he plays, but I don't think he finishes. I think the defense will have 3-plus sacks, and I think the final score, Bob, will be the Chiefs 30, Chargers 16. So Travis Kelce had 7 for 89.
I was going to say, that was good.
That's about it.
That was good.
The Chiefs won, and I think the defense did have like 3.5 sacks.
They sacked him twice. Chris Jones both times.
Okay.
Not bad.
Wasn't as bad as I thought.
Give you a C.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's mid.
C's
yeah.
get degrees. I got two things right.
Yeah. All right, here we go with Bob.
All right, here's what I've got in the script this week. Chiefs and Chargers will kick off in L.A., and the Chargers will have players missing. I don't know who it's going to be, but we're setting the tone. The Chargers are not going to be playing at full strength today. You can hear Jim Nance and Tony Romo, look out! And we'll have like maybe a missing tackle, maybe a missing quarterback. Obviously, Derwin James is not going to play in that game. So we're already going to have the folks out there with the narrative, oh, the Chiefs catch every break in the world, right? Kansas City will kick off as they do every game to start the game.
Wrong.
Chargers will move down the field. You know it's a bend but don't break defense, right? The Chargers will move down the field and probably come away with an early lead, whether it's 7-0 or 3-0. Nice. They'll get early points. The Chiefs will get the ball, and Kareem Hunt or Travis Kelce will get featured a lot on that first drive.
Travis did.
My friend, as Lee Corso would say, not so fast, my friend. The Chiefs will also try to air it out because the narrative has been they don't throw deep anymore.
They did.
We went over those Patrick Mahomes numbers. Todd McShay is saying that nonsense. I think the Chiefs are going to open it up and they're going to throw deep on that first drive. First half, it's going to be close. Chiefs will get a twofer at the end of the half and beginning of the second half. They'll get like a field goal or touchdown right before halftime, receive the kickoff, go down, and open up a two-score lead. Travis Kelce will be a beast in the second half. He'll have 7 receptions on the day. He'll score a big-time touchdown. Chiefs win 34-17, and then the national fans will complain somehow about the referees, even though they're not going to have an impact on the game. And the referees didn't have an impact on the game at all yesterday, right? I had 7 receptions. I was pretty good. That's a B. That's a solid B,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's a B.
Got him scoring early points. Chiefs playing from behind, airing it out. They did a 54-yard pass and a 38-yard pass and a 29-yard pass to Noah Gray, and of course the big play at the end to Xavier Worthy to kind of win it there. What was it, 13 or 14 yards? So they aired it out a little bit. Travis got involved. I'll take a B.
Yeah, I'll take a B.
That's a solid B for that one.
Give you that. The early lead was a nice take.
Well, that happens in every game, though. This team gives up a touchdown early and everybody loses their mind and they never get scored on again.
Chiefs lose first quarter, win the game would be a good parlay just about every week.
Oh, I was sitting next to a guy yesterday. We were down 10-0. And he goes, wouldn't it be nice if Missouri had legal sports bets? I said, right now I'm hammering Chiefs.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Minus 6.5. Yeah. I would have literally put Chiefs win by at least 6.5 at that very moment. Would have been probably like plus 325. Free money. Free money, Missouri. Yeah. Well, you would have paid me, but you still would have gotten some sort of juice.
Yeah.
Spot Fesco, Mac Morey. I'm Dusty Likens. This is Fesco and Dusty, brought to you by Rainer Garage Doors of Kansas City. LiftMaster has patented MyQ Technologies, number one professionally installed garage door opener. Find them at RainerKC.com. Coming up on the other side, we dive back into this Royals anniversary of that 2014 wildcard game. Gene Watson. He'll join the show, and we'll get back into that Royals audio from the clubhouse after that victory, clinching a playoff spot. Bob Fesco, Dusty Likens, Mac Morey. You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
Back in on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan. A busy day on a Monday. It's flying by. You think today is fast.
No doubt.
Wait till tomorrow and Wednesday. And then by the time the Royals have won their first two in Baltimore, it'll be ready for the weekend, which is football, college football, pro football. Chiefs play Monday night, which means next week's even shorter.
Yeah, next week is going to fly by, too, because that Monday night game, man. I tell you, it'll be your first Monday night experience. Thursday night's not bad. You got Friday, and you can recover for the weekend. These Monday night games.
Mac, you going to the game on Monday?
I believe so.
Tuesday. We better bring donuts for Mac on Tuesday.
A lot of coffee, IV, of straight caffeine.
That's right. Yeah. No doubt about it.
You'll be fine. You're young.
I'll live.
Malleable.
The Royals, or the Chiefs still have Justin Watson, The Royals used to have Gene Watson. Yes.
That's exactly right. Gene Watson, man, responsible for getting us Cole Reagans here in Kansas City last year. Really fought to bring Cole Reagans to Kansas City, and now he's the number one starter for the wild card game against the Orioles this week. And Gene was the assistant to the general manager back in 2014 when they won the wild card, and he shares his wild card memory.
You know, to be honest with you, man, when you're down that late by that much, your mind begins to go into, okay, you know, what's next? You know, what are we going to have meetings? You know, what's this even going to look like? You know, what's going to happen? Because we had put so much from the minute we made the Shields and Davis deal to all the transactions, the Johnny Cueto's, the Edison Volquez's, the Chris Young's, all the deals that we had made. And to come up short in this one game was just going to be a real devastating thing for the organization, and really not knowing what's next. You know, what's going to happen? And you begin to go into a mode of, okay, you know, we're going to have to get to the folly. We're going to have meetings with our scouts to talk about, you know, what we're going to do. And just to know that, you know, Rusty Kuntz and the plan that he had, knowing that John Lester had not thrown over to first base, was not going to throw over to first base, and just to put the game in motion in the way that he did and to get us back into that ball game. You know, Mike Moustakas, I don't know if many people know that Mike Moustakas, you know, came off the field in the dugout and basically challenged the entire dugout that we are not losing this game tonight. So it was kind of a culmination of that first wave of Billy and Gordo and Luke Hochschaefer and Zach Greinke through that 06 to 010 group, and then, you know, Haas and Moose and all that next group kind of blending, Gordo, that next group kind of blending together. It was kind of like all the winning that they had done in the minor leagues, all the winning they had done with Team USA was all one, came to one culmination, one moment in time, down 7-3 to John Lester, where they just said, we're not going to quit. We're not going to lose this game. And it just really set the tempo for what was just an amazing ride.
Was that wild card game the greatest baseball game you've ever been a part of?
It's not even close. It's not even close. 35 years to the day, it's not even close.
I mean, I'm looking at my leg right now, the goosebumps when you're talking about it, because it's 10 years. It's gone by in a blur, Gene, as we all know. It also feels like it was, you know, just yesterday, and we were all getting there for that game and getting excited, wondering if we're in the postseason. And we talked to Ned, and he goes, nah, it doesn't count. You know, it doesn't count if you don't win the wild card game. It didn't count that we were in the postseason. Was that the attitude that everybody had?
100%. And I mean, and when you make the commitment, you know, we'd won like 72 games in 2012, and you make the Shields and Davis deal, which was one of the more controversial trades, you know, made in baseball at the time, and then you fall short in 13. You fall short in 14, and our mindset was never to just get in the playoffs. Our mindset was to win a world championship, because over the course of history, you know, when you talk about competition over process and finance, you play to win world championships, and ultimately that's what you will be remembered for. And that was our goal from the minute we got to Kansas City in 2006. And so just that one night, that one game, really so many intangible ways set the tone for us to continue to push to get us there in player acquisition, in our processes, in the employees we were bringing in the way we approached you know, our players with our fans. And I've never seen a city that had a connection with the players, even to today, like Kansas City does. It's just such a special place for players and fans. It's such a unique, kind of a small town vibe where, you know, the fans have so much access to the players. And just the stories behind the scenes, you know, the power and light parties where the players are paying all the bar tabs, and you know, they'd go to a restaurant and they'd leave waitresses tickets to the games, and they'd stop by and visit elderly fans that could. There's just so many great stories that come from that season that just ultimately define what the organization ended up being in 2015.
That's Gene Watson, former assistant to the general manager, recounting his tales of the wild card game. We've heard from Ryan Lefevre this morning. We've heard from Ned Yost this morning. We'll hear from Pedro Grifol in the 9 o'clock hour and talk about being in that dugout, watching Salvi get that base hit to win that wild card game. And you can catch all these interviews in full on the podcast page of the Odyssey app under Fesco and Dusty. You can hear from Dayton Moore. You can hear from Josh Willingham. You can hear from Christian Colon, and the full interviews of everybody that we talked to throughout this this 10-year look back. 10 years ago today was the greatest baseball game we ever did see. So
I want to bring this up because I don't know, obviously we can't tell the future 10 years from now,
right?
But where do you think this puts John Sherman this year on his tenure after what he was kind of scrutinized as of last year and this year moving into this season?
I don't think anybody has gained more by the Royals being in the postseason than John Sherman. And I think, you know, when the season started, I think there were a lot of fans who didn't like John because of the stadium thing that was going on. They thought he was, you know, trying to build the stadium for himself and not for Kansas City, which couldn't be anything further from the truth. John Sherman, I think, has done amazing things since he has taken over this ball club. He bought it right before COVID, navigated through a COVID, you know, year, then navigated through half fans, then navigated through 106 loss season, made a major change at the top of his organization, you know, appointed J.J. Piccolo as the general manager, spent $110 million or whatever it was this offseason, locked up Bobby Witt long term, and the Royals are in the playoffs. And if you had a beef with John Sherman in April or whatever it may have been for whatever reason, I don't think you can have a beef with John Sherman now. I got to look at John Sherman, and I know this isn't going to be true, Dusty, but I'm going to say it anyway. He should have a 100% approval rating right now from Royals fans. Like, why wouldn't you approve of what John Sherman is doing with this ball club right now? I love everything that he has done, you know, with this organization, and he continues to move it forward. He should have a 100% approval rating at this point in time.
He should have got 100% approval rating after giving Bobby Witt Jr. a long-term contract.
Yeah, like, but they didn't even stop after that, you know?
No. And, you know, I think he's shown multiple times that he cares about winning baseball because of everything that he's done. Sign your, you know, perennial MVP candidate, batting champion this year to a long-term deal. Keep him in Kansas City. Not only that, went into this offseason, found a bunch of arms to revamp this pitching rotation. Lugo and Waka are not here. This team is not doing what they're
not
doing this
all.
Year.
Nope.
And then the injury happens to Vinny Pasquantino, the trade deadline. You go get pieces. You might not have liked everything that happened. That's the way baseball works. You go try to find somebody that can be a fit to this system. Maybe you get three or four and one pans out. That's still a win, no matter how you look at it. You found your closer, whether he's as nails as, you know, Kenley Jansen in his prime or Wade Davis in his prime. That's beyond him. You have a guy that is a solidified closer. Not only that, you are now adding to your bullpen with guys like Michael Lorenzen. You're adding arms to your bullpen with a guy like Brady Singer. You can build
that
team.
I have no faith in him. I'll just say I don't need to see Brady Singer anymore
right.
this year.
No, that's fair.
You know,
I mean, he's on your Sky Moore list.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's my Sky Moore. That's a good analogy.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
But, you know, that's the thing about this Royals team is that now they have house money. They don't have as much pressure as if any pressure that anybody else has. Dodgers the favorite, Yankees the second favorite to win the World Series. And then the Royals are sitting down there at plus 2,500. So, you know, just do what got you here. Keep doing your starting pitching. Keep playing defense and cause havoc on the base path, because now you're going to see Bobby try to swipe second, I think, more often than not. Mm-hmm. You're going to see Darren Blanco come in the sixth and try to get that base running, that stolen base, and get somebody in. You go up 2-0 in the sixth inning, there's a really good chance this Royals team could win that game almost every single game.
I agree. And that's really all it takes in the playoffs, is get those little leads early and then hang on to those leads. And I think a lot of this series, and we'll get Josh Vernier in on this conversation as well, a lot of the series truly to me resides with Q and the way that he manages this team. I do not want to see him, as we said on Friday, manage like that cat did down in Tampa and take Blake Snell out of a game and where he's dominating. If Cole Reagans is rolling through this thing, you leave Cole Reagans in there for as long as you possibly can. This is an HDH at the back end of the bullpen. You don't want to chance it, because I think the game plan for Baltimore, much like the game plan for the Royals should be, just get to the bullpen and we're going to have a chance. Get to the bullpen and we're going to have an opportunity. Well, if Cole Reagans is dealing, I don't want to get to the bullpen. I don't want a bullpen pitcher. Like, I think it's fine to allow Cole Reagans to go. If he's cruising and you get to six innings and it's nothing, you can't turn it over to the bullpen. Learn from the mistakes that guy made in Tampa, where Matt Quatrero was on the bench of, and don't make those mistakes again by pulling a starter out when he's dominating right now, because the bullpen just isn't to that level where it was with HDH. You don't have an automatic 7-8-9. Let your starter cook, man. And if Cole Reagan stays in for 8 innings and they win the series because of it, that's great. But I think you got to ride with Cole Reagan's and Lugo for as long as you possibly can in these games.
It's also interesting how every like sort of scenario in playoff baseball has a little nugget to it, right? Like if the Royals and Yankees play in the divisional round, we'll go back to the 70s and like what those teams were. Sure. This series is, you know, a battle of Adley Rutschman and Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah.
Both these guys were drafted to change their franchises that were down in the dumps. Since the addition of Adley Rutschman, the Baltimore Orioles general manager has really built that team up. Obviously, the additions of Gunnar Henderson and other players as well. Matt Holliday, Matt Holliday's son. And then you look at Bobby Witt Jr., picked second in that draft, given a big contract. Both teams are playing in the playoffs, and it's game one, and both these guys are face changers for their franchise, and they're both doing their job. And speaking of doing their job, Vern, you're putting in overtime in playoff baseball. I think you're the only guy that's okay doing overtime when you really want to with this playoff push run here for the Royals.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of people. a slight echo. There are a lot of people that are happy working overtime when it comes to this Royals ball club.
Josh Vernier, a Royals insider here on 96.5 The Fan. And, you know, obviously today, Josh, we're celebrating the 10-year anniversary of the Royals wildcard win. We played the game last night. We've been having kind of retrospective from folks who were part of that game and part of the organization some 10 years ago. And when you look back 10 years ago, where we were going into that wildcard game, it kind of gives me the same feeling of going into this Baltimore series, Vern. And I'm just like, okay, I'm just kind of, you know, happy to be here. I don't have high expectations. I don't have any expectations. Whatever happens is great for me at this point in time. What is the feeling that you have from an expectation standpoint going into this Baltimore series and going into this postseason?
Well, expectations, I think the Royals can win this series. You know,
I do too. I think the first break, Vern, is
move on and take on the New York Yankees in the ALDS. But to your point, as far as pressure, honestly, I don't think there's as much pressure on this team as there was in 2014. You had the whole, well, if they don't win this game, they never even really made it to October, so did they really even make the postseason? There was some pressure on that team because it had been building, dating back to 2011 and 2012 and our time. And, you know, this was Haas and Moose and Kane and Billy and Gordo. We were ready. We've been building this thing up. Ned, don't screw it up. Ned, I swear to God, if you screw... So there was real pressure on that team. The only pressure I see for this 2024 ball club is individual. You mentioned Matt Quatrero earlier. Of course, there's pressure on the skipper for all 12 playoff teams, for maybe even, you know, 13 if you want to throw the Mets and the Braves for the game coming up, the games coming up later on today. And then on an individual basis, you know, Bobby Witt Jr., great season, batting title, 211 base hits. But I remember growing up watching Barry Bonds win MVPs in the National League and then lay an egg in October, and all anyone talked about was the egg in October. Now, in Kansas City, we'll appreciate what Bobby's done regardless of what happens the next few weeks. It is the greatest season ever put forth by anybody in a Royals uniform, but as far as a national landscape, Bobby needs to make some noise if he's going to do what you talked about last week, Bob, which I agree 100%. Bobby has the chance to ascend on a national level to where Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge are. So Bobby, Salvi, of course, has some pressure on him as he tries to, you know, really put the finishing touches on his Hall of Fame candidacy. And then your other two all-stars, Cole Reagan, Seth Lugo, let's not goof around. Those guys have plenty of pressure on them because, to your point, right before I came on, Bob, Cole Reagan's, I still believe he's the best option to face that Baltimore lineup a third time. When we get to the sixth or the seventh inning, if Cole Reagan's is doing what he's done all season, I want him facing Rutschman and Santander and Gunnar Henderson a third time. Again, I'll go back to something I brought up on the show a few times. If you have four battles with Gunnar Henderson over the course of Tuesday's game one, who do you want on the hill for those four plate appearances? To me, it's still Cole Reagan's for the first three, and then Lucas Erceg for the fourth.
Talking with Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, and I think the first break of the postseason happened yesterday. The Royals got Baltimore and not Houston. I didn't like that matchup with Houston. I personally love this matchup with Baltimore. I hear from people that are smarter than me about baseball. I see the odds. Nobody's favoring the Royals. Why does it appear they're such an underdog from everybody outside of Kansas City?
Do you have the odds in front of you?
I do, I saw plus 155 this morning, plus 131. I think Dusty saw plus 144. Like, it's pretty heavily favored against the Royals in this game.
Yeah, to me, that sounds more just like a lay-in 3.5 in football because they're at home. Plus 130-something. Yeah, I'll ride that all day. When I look at the matchup of these two teams, when I look at the tail of the tape, I really don't care about Baltimore's offense in April or May.
Right.
And I really don't care about season statistics. So earlier today, I'm diving into what these two teams have done since the calendar flipped to September. The only advantage that Baltimore has is obviously offensively. Since September started, Baltimore has the 10th best offense in Major League Baseball, the Royals third to last. But outside of that, everything is advantage Royals. Since the beginning of September, the Royals have the 8th best rotation, Baltimore 21st. Bullpen, since the beginning of September, the Royals 4th best in baseball, Baltimore 17th. The Royals all season have had the best defense. Baltimore's barely top 20. And both teams in September have been middle of the road on the base paths, but the Royals still slightly better. And as Dusty mentioned a moment ago, it's already October coming up tomorrow. Once that calendar flips to October, I do think you'll see a bit more aggressiveness on the base paths, just like we did 10 years ago during that wild card game. So really, tail of the tape says, if the Royals pitching can do what they've done all season, and that is limit good hitting, well, then the Royals are the better team starting on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I agree.
Or afternoon, I should say.
You know, I totally agree. That's why I needed to talk to you and make sure I wasn't, you know, hungover or drunk or something when I'm looking at this going, like, I can't comprehend why everybody loves Baltimore, you know, in this series, other than playing at home. But they're not that. They were actually a better road team this year than they were at home.
Furthermore, listen, Baltimore, and Bob, you know this. First inning, you know, Bobby runs into one. Vinny Pasquantino runs into one against Corbin Burns. And all of a sudden, the 40,000 at Camden Yards, which can make noise. They are terrific baseball fans, but they are playing with a lot of pressure, right?
Yep.
They got swept last year by the eventual World Series champion Texas Rangers. That was a Baltimore team that won 100 games, but they were just kind of bursting onto the scenes. The fans were okay with it. It was still an exciting season. 2024 in Baltimore will not be an exciting season if they lose in the wild card series. It will not be acceptable. They're not playing with the same kind of house money that the Kansas City Royals are. So to me, man, with Bobby, Salvi, you know, the power potential of a MJ Melendez, a Hunter Renfro, those guys with one swing of the bat can not only erase lesser than seasons, if we're talking about an MJ Melendez or a Michael Massey, not only can they completely flip around their 2024, but they can shut that place down quick. It will get very tight. The backsides will pucker up of every Orioles fan if the Royals find themselves jumping out to an early lead, because home field advantage could actually work against Baltimore, because the pressure, the anxiety being felt in the stands will find its way into that dugout, onto that field, and hopefully onto that mound and inside the head of a Corbin Burns.
Vern, what do you expect in this series? I know there's a lot going on. You'll be diving into it with your pregame show that starts, I believe, at 2 o'clock tomorrow. What's kind of like Vern's, like, you know, maybe there's an unsung hero. Maybe there's somebody you're watching outside of the typical Bobby, Sal, and Cole Reagans when it comes to this game on Tuesday at 3:08.
No. What I'm watching is what got them here. Mm-hmm. And listen, man, if Vinny can be on the roster, whether or not he's in the lineup or not, but if Vinny can be a part of it, man, then that almost brings back the team that we've watched all season, a team that was steamrolling towards 90-plus victories. It's the same team we watched for a majority of the first 6 months of the season, but with a better bullpen. It certainly feels. So when I look at this game two, game one tomorrow, It's the standard that has been set by this team. That's what I'm looking for. Elite starting pitching, elite defense, elite team speed, and I need my clutch bats and Bobby, Salvi, and Vinny. I need them to be clutch. If you do what you've done all season, there's really no reason to believe that the Royals won't move on to take on the Yankees. Now, you get to the ALDS, you get to the ALCS, where it's more tournament baseball. You're getting a little bit more off time in there. The Yankees will be able to ride their... now, their bullpen isn't anything to necessarily fear. They will have some additional starters out of that bullpen. Luke Weaver has been throwing the ball well, but they'll be able to go to the relievers for multiple innings, multiple days in a row. So I think once the ALDS gets here, the game starts to change, the expectations start to change. But if you're playing day in and day out, you're playing regular season baseball like the wild card series is. Reagan's and Lugo, I'll put them up against anybody in the sport. So yeah, I'm leaning Royals for sure.
Yeah, and like I feel confident every week about the Chiefs 35-0 that they're going to win. I have that confidence for the Royals, and I don't care what odds say. I don't care what people in the industry say. I'm not losing that confidence on this baseball team right now because the Yankees don't even scare me. Vern, like, had we been facing Houston, I'd be a little concerned, obviously. Like, that's a legitimate 7 straight ALCS appearances and all that. They understand what it takes and how to win.
And the pitching.
And the pitching, right. Like, I don't fear Cleveland. I don't fear the Yankees. I don't feel the Reaper. Any of this kind of stuff. Like, yeah. I just feel, maybe I'm uber confident in this ball club, but I just feel like the matchup works for them. We'll see you in New York.
You should be confident in this team. They have the best rotation in the postseason, and in my opinion, they have the best all-around player in the postseason in Bobby Witt Jr. And I know it's not football, it's not basketball. One guy can't make that big of a difference, but for one game, Bobby Witt Jr. certainly can. Cole Reagan certainly can. Seth Lugo certainly can. The Royals have 4 guys going in the first 2 games that can single-handedly win the game, and we've watched them single-handedly win games all summer long. I look at Baltimore, Corbin Burnes and Santander and Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson, they have stars as well. But I think the Royals have better arms at the end of the day. So I think that's what gets them past Baltimore. I'm with you. I don't fear anyone. I agree that Houston would have been a unfortunate draw. I'm happy that it's Baltimore. I'm not anxious to see Houston down the line. I'm not anxious really to see Cleveland down the line. But I can promise you this, the confidence that you feel is reflected inside that clubhouse. And I can tell you this without any doubt, they fear nobody.
Vinny, expectations here?
Yeah, I don't know how you can't expect it because, listen, most organizations this time of the year are going to hold things close to the vest. They're not going to try and oversell something to their fan base. But you go back to Saturday, J.J. Piccolo's on television saying, I can't believe we're even considering Vinny Pasquantino being on the roster and in the lineup coming up on Tuesday. But here we are. And then you listen to Mac Quatrero say, yeah, it's a very real thing that Vinny could not only be on the roster but in the lineup against Corbin Burnes coming up on Tuesday. He's going to take batting practice today out in Baltimore, and if all things check out, I would think Vinny's going to be right back in there. I don't know if he's hitting third, fourth, or fifth, but either way, one of the best clutch bats in baseball certainly appears as if he could be on that roster starting tomorrow and certainly a part of the team when they go to the Bronx starting on Saturday.
All right, Vern, well, get some sleep. You got a big boy show coming up in about 30 hours here from now, as you'll be on 96.5
Quick
The Fan.
30-hour nap.
That's right, man.
Yeah,
you got
quick turnaround.
Get the emotion and the windpipes ready, man. You get some playoff baseball once again for the first time in 9 years, Vern.
No doubt. Can't wait, man. Enjoy it.
Absolutely. Love you, Vern.
Absolutely. He's right. Enjoy it is the key
That's
phrase.
Right.
Enjoy what's going on, man.
Sit back and enjoy it. He talked to us there for about 10 minutes. The most important thing he said lasted 2 seconds, said just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
What you got to do. Coming up on the other side, injury woes continue for the Chiefs roster, what they can do and what Mahomes continues to show as he gets older and older. Yeah, that's right. He's 29. I'm Bob Pesco. That's Dusty Likens and Mac Morey as well. You're listening to 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
But now the Chiefs have their best starting field position. Down by 10, they'll take over at their own 46-yard line, first and 10. Kareem Hunt will take his turn again at running back. In motion is Sky Moore. Moving short to the right is Mahomes. Gunning it long. Coming down the near side. The pass is caught. Touchdown! Kansas City! A long bomb! And the Chiefs finally get there! A 54-yard bomb to Xavier Worthy. Patrick Mahomes, a perfect throw, burning Christian Fulton.
You can tell Mitch was ready to unleash that call. We haven't got to hear that really other than week one, Xavier Worthy's name getting dropped in that gigantic pass play by Patrick Mahomes. 54 yards, 62.2 yards in the air. Good
His
to see.
His longest ever.
Yeah, career high, which is interesting. Bob Fesco, Mac Morey, Dusty Legacy. With Tyreek Hill and everybody, like that's it.
That's it. Yeah, I know.
God, I was happy to see that.
That was needed.
It was good, man. It was much needed. The big one to Kelsey was needed, too.
Yes,
do you remember the first drive they had on offense to start the game?
It was not good.
He did that, like, he cocked back. Like, he was
ready to go.
First play
in
the game.
First play.
Yeah.
I saw him do that. I was like, that's either a ploy or he thought he had it. Because
he was ready
back.
Yep.
Like, he did that thing where, like, you're watching the kids out in the backyard and they got, like, the rock or the baseball in your hand. You're like, I don't know where he's throwing it. Whoa, whoa. And then it was like, oh, never mind. And I was like, when he did that, I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
And then maybe that was just foreshadowing to what would eventually happen, where it was, you know, like we had Derek Johnson on earlier. He was like, I thought he overthrew him. Mm-hmm. Turns out he hit him right in stride. I mean, Worthy made a great catch.
And pass interference.
MPI.
like he's getting pulled down, and he still finds a way to make that catch. Thank goodness, because, you know, the Chiefs can't get a yard. So, I mean, thank goodness he was able to catch that and get in the end zone for the touchdown. But I think all the Travis Kelce conversations need to take a back seat this week. All the referee conversations need to take a back seat this week. They won a game yesterday from an offensive standpoint where they probably faced more adversity than they faced in quite some time. I mean, you lose your number one target and a guy who's going to have an all-world season and he's done for the year because of an interception and the quarterback takes him out, you're probably feeling pretty low. But they figured it out, and that's the beauty about this team right now, right? They're just a team and an organization that figures it out. Like, okay, this is a defensive-first team now. I'm prepared to say this is no longer an offensive juggernaut in the NFL. It is a phenomenal defense, and the offense – Patrick Mahomes is a game manager. Go out, manage the game. Don't lose the football game for us. Go out there and figure out a way to just get enough points to keep us on top. Our defense will take care of everything else. And that's kind of the changing shape of the NFL right now. And that's okay. I mean, Patrick Mahomes doesn't have to be a guy like he was in 2018. And sometimes I think everybody, including the three of us, sometimes still believe it's 2018 and they're going to be putting up 50 some points a game. And that's just not the case. I mean, I was going over my Hy-Vee savings today. I'm going to save 17 cents at the pump. That's a low number, you know, considering the Chiefs were so used to them scoring all these points. But the last 2 years, they're not a point scoring team. They're a defensive led team with an offense that manages the game, that scores just enough points to give you the opportunity to win. It's been that way for the first four games of this season. It was pretty much that way all of last season. And that's okay. I love defensive football. This doesn't bother me in the slightest.
We did lose Rashee Rice. Information not officially out yet, but everybody's saying ACL.
Yeah, he's done.
Hear that, but you can always just, like I've said this before, watch an athlete's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We heard about Pacheco in the locker room in tears, towel over his head, just completely distraught. You saw Rashee Rice like on the sideline when he stood up. He's like, there was no pressure on anything. And then he puts the towel over his face in the cart and he's like, I'm out.
You
mentioned earlier.
He had a brace on his leg and they carted him to the bus.
Which then everybody's thought process goes. And I let the entire day kind of fizzle out before I tweeted it. And I said, okay, I think if I'm the Chiefs, I make a trade for a wide receiver one. And again, I'm going to get backlash from this. Well, last year they did this. No, last year they had Rashee Rice.
I think they just have to make a trade for a wide receiver because you're not going to find a number one out there at this point in time.
I mean, number one on your roster. Well, I don't think Xavier Worthy is your number one.
You could go out and find a number one wide receiver right now.
Yeah.
Who?
I mean, there's a bunch.
What number one wide receiver is getting traded to the Chiefs at this point in time?
Well, that's what we're talking about. Amari Cooper. DeAndre Hopkins.
Are they going to trade him?
Well, why not?
Both those guys are possible.
If I'm Brett Veach, I call Tennessee about DeAndre Hopkins and say, hey.
But is he a one?
Yes. In this offense, he would be.
He'd be your wide receiver.
Why can't Xavier Worthy be the one right now? I mean, we've seen really good things already out of that guy.
He's not a one style receiver. Who's your number one in Philadelphia? AJ Brown.
Yeah. Just because he's big and tall. I mean,
because he's that style of receiver. He's the guy that can go up and get it. He can run the crossing route. He can be strong.
I mean, Xavier Worthy's 170 pounds.
Yeah.
If he gets lit up over the middle like A.J. Brown, Ja'Marr Chase, those type of guys do who are receiver ones, he's not going
to
make it.
Well, the good news is they don't really allow you to go over the middle and get destroyed anymore. So that's that's a bonus point.
Devonta Smith missed this week because he just literally went over the middle and got destroyed.
Well, dirty plays maybe, and they'll flag you for it.
Derwin James isn't playing football this week because of over the middle getting killed.
Exactly. So they're trying to take it out of the game. Right. So it's better than it was 15 years ago going over the middle and getting your head handed to you or something like that. I hate the fact that we have to categorize as wide receiver one. I think they're going to go to a practice squad and they're going to sign some guy off a practice squad. I do, because you're going to hear, well, the salary cap, we don't have any money, all this kind of stuff. They'll end up getting some guy off a practice squad that nobody knows will be like, oh my God, the new Harrison Butker is here and this guy's going to go out and perform well. Like, whoever they go out and get, I think is going to be somebody that's going to be a good football player just because of the system and the coaching and everything like that. Like, to trying to go out and get a huge name, I could be wrong. I think that's a pipe dream right now, and I just don't think a big name guy is going to happen. I think we have a better chance of getting somebody that is probably on the practice squad of an NFL team right now than we do a big name receiver.
Well, you can go look at teams that are going to need picks. And you can go to Tennessee, who gave you a third and a seventh for L'Jarius Sneed. You give one of those right back and say, we'll take DeAndre Hopkins. We'll give you a fifth and a seventh, if they would do that.
They say no on Hopkins. Get Tyler Boyd from him.
That you could do that.
Yep.
You could go to the Carolina Panthers, who also need picks, and be like, hey, Deontay Johnson ain't going to be with your team in 3 years. Next year.
Next year.
We'll go ahead and take him off your hands for you. Here's a fourth round pick for Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, that's good. But
he's not necessarily a wide receiver one, but he would run the one routes in this offense. That's all I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying that you're going to go get a Justin Jefferson, a Ja'Marr Chase. Could go get a Ja'Marr Chase. Could go trade for T. Higgins. I don't know. Their season's not looking great.
No.
They got their first win this week. They're 1-3. They're obviously not going to trade with you. The thing about the Chiefs and go getting a wide receiver is you've got to find teams that are willing to do it, and you got to find teams that are willing to trade with you. Nobody in the AFC is probably going to trade with you.
That's exactly
Tennessee
right.
Tennessee might, because they don't really have a fighting chance this year.
Who does Buffalo have? They like to trade with us.
MBS.
MBS.
Did he make the team?
Yeah, he's on their roster.
He's there.
But I mean, you have guys in Jacksonville like Christian Kirk. A lot of people are looking at.
That's
but he's got a big contract. I believe. Yeah. I didn't look at his.
No, he does.
He had one of the hugest contracts when this wide
three
receiver.
3 years ago. Yeah. So I don't know if this is his last year, if he's had another, or if he has like an opt-out way. But Amari Cooper, you can opt out. Devontae Adams, he can opt out. He's a big, big cap hit next year, but I think there's a way to opt out of the Devontae Adams. But again, when you tell people on different conversations, why would Pittsburgh or why would they do this? Why would Vegas trade Devontae Adams to the Chiefs? They probably won't.
But you still got to make the phone call for all those guys.
And I think they do go make a name or make a draft. And then somebody says, well, what about DK Metcalf? Yeah, but they're 3-0.
They're winning games.
If they win tonight,
they're not getting rid of DK Metcalf.
Massively, he's the franchise player.
Yeah, they're not getting rid of him. Trust me, the name looks great. But the problem is with this conversation.
That division is wide open for Seattle to just take right now.
Yeah. I mean, Arizona, the Rams, and whoever else is out in the West. And San Francisco's not doing any better. But again, you have to look at the conversation as it's not no fair trades are turned off in Madden. You have to look at a team that's willing to do it. You have to look at a contract the player's under, and you have to look at the type of player that you're going to get. You're not going to get a DK Metcalf. As much as I would love that, Seattle is not getting rid of DK Metcalf. But Cleveland, who needs help, whose season is going down the dumps, would be like, you know what? Yeah. We'll trade Amari Cooper. We'll try to get some in the offseason. So
you try to think, though, if Cleveland is smart enough to realize they're in the dumps. They did give Deshaun Watson $230 million of fully guaranteed money. I'm not sure Cleveland's playing with a full deck and understands reality.
No doubt.
Did they just lose to the Raiders?
Yeah.
Okay, in a home game, and I say that jokingly because it was in Las Vegas, but there was orange everywhere in that stadium.
Raiders, like the Chiefs, are 2-0 to the AFC North. Who'd have thought that was going to happen?
That's crazy, right? That is wild.
We'll talk to our Chiefs contributor, Josh Briscoe, on the other side on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City Sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan.